set a bhavana practice, if you want to, I'm going to suggest a way of meditating that you could try if you want to, which is that you could stay very aware of the heart center and the belly, like I was emphasizing last week. And then you could imagine that the metta that you're trying to feel is already there, that it's there in the universe. It's like sunlight that's pouring down on you and all beings. And all you're doing is opening up to that. So you don't have to force anything, you don't have to cultivate or push to generate metta. You're trying to stay concentrated enough to open up with receptivity to the love that's already there. And if you can do that, you could even imagine it as light filling your body. If you can open up in an imaginative way, it is really there. It is really there. So you could try that if you want to. Last week, I set you some homework, and well, there were two things to try and do apart from meditating every day. So three things in total. There was meditating every day, and can anybody remember the other two things? Yep.
Sit silently for 10 minutes.
Yep. Doing nothing. Yep.
And take on an act of generosity or kindness.
Yes.
once a day
that you wouldn't otherwise have done.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't otherwise have done. So what I'd like you to do is, in a moment, I'm going to ask you to pair up with somebody near you, and we're going to spend just a few minutes, maybe about 5 minutes, between you, talking about how you got on. And if you weren't here last week, well, in a way, that's no excuse, because you could have watched it online, because it was all recorded and it was put up online, so you could have watched it and you could have done it. So yes, if you didn't manage to do it, either the sitting doing nothing or the kindly or generous act or the meditation, well, ask yourself why. Yeah, don't let yourself off the hook too easily. Say, well, why? Why am I doing this course if I didn't do that? But if you did do it, then ask yourself, well, has it had any effect? And if so, what do I notice? Yeah? What do I notice? I'm not going to give you very long, because we haven't got very long. So it's just going to, you won't be able to go into all the detail about every time you sat and did nothing, what didn't happen, or something like that. You're going to have to be a little bit more concise and summarise things. Yep. So find a partner, introduce yourself, and then I'll ring a bell after a couple of minutes so you can swap over. Let's just spend a little bit of time hearing from, well, we won't be able to hear from very many people, but a few people, as to how you got on. Perhaps we could start with how you have got on with the just sort of doing nothing, and any sort of observations about the effect of that.
It's very hard.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yes. So did you manage at all? Did you?
I tried, but I always at all times thought I'm actually doing something, like I'm looking out of the window.
Yeah.
So I'm doing something.
Yeah.
I'm noticing the trees, but then I'm noticing the trees, so I'm doing something.
Yeah.
Or else my hand kept sort of reaching for my phone, and I had to walk away from it. And
yeah.
It was a fight, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Struggle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is hard, actually, but well done for making the time and trying to do it. I think looking at trees is fine, actually. Doing, you are allowed to just enjoy the world around you. Perhaps I should have made that clearer. bit difficult to completely do nothing, isn't it? Unless you're comatose or something. So you can sit in a chair and enjoy looking. But it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, your hand reaches for the phone, and what Shutter City was saying in the announcement, wasn't she? How we live these screen lives. Really, really interesting just to notice the force of habit. So even if you didn't feel that kind of very much happened, it's really good just to notice where our mind tends to. Yeah, good. Anybody else have any thoughts, observations about doing nothing, trying to do nothing? Yeah.
I'm wondering now if like just people watching cameras doing nothing.
Is that what you were doing?
Well, I kind of didn't because I wasn't here the second half of last week, but I'm just thinking, yeah, sometimes I love sitting doing nothing. If that counts as doing nothing, then it's one of my favourite things.
Yeah. Well, you could do that. Yeah. Yeah. Depends. In a way, you're also trying to let the mind quiet.
Yeah, that's not so good at, but quite in a feeling happy way.
Yeah. Well, that's something, isn't it?
I found that when I've managed to do it, once I've got past the stop planning, you know, because there was the planning, that when I actually managed to do it, everything was absolutely fine.
Ah, that's interesting.
Which came as a bit of a surprise, because I suppose I thought like that might give rise to more opportunities to think and to be anxious and that, but once I stopped being busy, it was fine. It was a bit like, oh.
That's really good.
Good,
well
but,
done.
You know, surprised.
But also, well done for that. I think that's really good if you can sort of stop and recognise that actually there's, you know, life's fine. It's sort of all taken care of itself in a strange sort of way. I'm not saying that we don't have to make an effort. Of course we do. We have to kind of do things. But at another level, at a deeper, more true level, in a certain sense, life's fine. And of course it isn't in terms of getting what we want. And I'm not saying that there isn't pain and suffering, etc. But in a certain sense, all we have to do is just stop and enjoy.
Yeah, I realised it was a sense of momentum that was giving me the anxiety.
That's right. Well done. What about the kind or generous act, the daily kind of extra act of kindness or generosity? I wonder if you have any observations, particularly not necessarily what you did that was kind or generous, but what you noticed the effect was, either on yourself or the other person. Yeah.
I think for me, firstly I noticed that I don't really do that.
Right,
like,
yeah.
So I did 6 out of the 7 days.
Ah, good.
And,
well done.
And it was really, like, exciting. Oh, my God, let's look for the next thing.
Yeah, great.
It was, like, so rewarding.
Yeah, lovely.
You know.
Can you say in what way it was rewarding?
It was just, like, the sense of contribution that
yes.
I was having.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a lovely experience for myself.
Yeah.
Like it got to like it was nearly midnight and one of the nights, I haven't done anything, what should I do? And then I thought, I'm gonna write a thank you letter to the care home who are looking after my mum. And it's like, let's do that. You know, and then
great.
Rather
than wake somebody up.
That's right.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really lovely. That's lovely to hear. Yeah, no, well done. In a way, it's lovely to hear because it's so simple, isn't it? It's just, but what it does is it's a sort of reorientation of our normal, habitual, self-oriented kind of world, or way of being, and just that reorienting to see what I can contribute, as you said, changes not only our perspective, but it makes life much more fulfilling. It starts to have a real effect on our consciousness. That's what I want to come to later on and explore what it does as we, as it were, reorientate our natural tendency to put me first. Yeah, great. Yes?
I wanted to share something
that's
not about the act, but about how I felt about the response.
Sure.
Basically, I'm a teacher and I had to teach in a different campus today. And when I I was running a bit late, so I was walking quite fast, and I noticed that there was a key on the outside, and on just literally hanging out of somebody's front door.
Mm.
So I knocked on the front door, and the person was upstairs. I think they were trying to communicate to me, who are you?
Mm.
And so I just carried on knocking, because I wasn't a random person that's just knocking the door. She eventually came down with a baby and was really stressed. She looked stressed. And I said, look, your key's on the outside. I just wanted to let you know that you've left it outside. She said, oh, you could have just put it through the letterbox. And for me, because I'm really trying to practice the mindfulness, and for me it was a learning opportunity. It was about the fact that someone doesn't have to say thank you.
Yeah.
When you do an act of kindness, you know you've done something
kind.
That's right. Actually, the response you get doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if I wasn't meditating daily, or if I wasn't practicing mindfulness, I probably would be just a little bit pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah.
But actually, it was just really interesting to
To
examine how I felt about that she didn't take
Yeah, well done, well done. In a way, you've learned two things there. There's something about the act of kindness, and then there's something about how normally we expect thanks. Or we expect some sort of positive response, and then it doesn't always come. And then where are we? And I think that that's a really challenging thing to do, to stay with our experience and not get into irritation or blame. And well done for sort of being mindful enough to stop yourself from going down what would be a very sort of natural and understandable response. So I think that's great. That's really, really good. And it's an important learning, because you're right, you don't always get the gratitude, you don't always get the appreciation, even when you've acted from generosity and with the best of intentions. And also what you spotted was that this person was really stressed. And you can tell, can't you, that when somebody is stressed, their consciousness, and I guess this happens to all of us, narrows. Earlier last week or the week before, I've been talking about expansiveness. And when one is stressed and not being able to be very aware, you're narrowed. And then it's like you can't really take in anything positive. Everything plays into this, I'm stressed or I'm anxious, even an act of kindness. So from her perspective, she's in a state of pain. Compared to how you were, because her consciousness is narrow in that moment. And that narrowness is painful in itself. Yeah? And an act of kindness or generosity is an expansive act. It expands our consciousness. It expands our perspective. And in that expansiveness, there's real fulfillment. There's real fulfillment to be had, even if you don't always get the pleasurable, appreciative response.
How do you counterbalance when the gratitude or the sense of almost a little bit of futility, or that there's a sense of that you're not being, that there, not necessarily the gratitude, but that your response is met with something like that? How do you sort of counterbalance it? Like that, as a sort of, not a rule, but like how do you put yourself in a situation, how do you stop yourself responding to that?
Yeah, so I think it, first of all, it's not easy, but mindfulness is really important. So first of all, as you were saying, that if we're not aware enough, if we're not being mindful, then we won't even catch ourselves getting irritated or angry or starting to blame, and will be, you know, sort of somewhere down the track of anger before we even know that we're doing it. So mindfulness is really important. I guess the priority in those situations, though, is seeing if you can stop yourself from lashing out and causing more hurt. If you can do that, that's something. And then the sort of harder, perhaps, thing to do is to not even get into resentment or irritation. And sometimes that's not so possible, but I think what you can do is if you do get into it, you then, well, one thing that helps me is to start reflecting on something like what I've just said, that actually that person in that stressed and irritable state is in pain. And they're acting from unawareness because they don't have the choice, the spaciousness in their mind. So you can start to maybe empathize even though they've acted in a harsh or unkind way, or see it from their perspective. I mean, this person you're talking about had a young baby, and you know, there's a clue there as to what sort of stress that might cause. So something about trying to use reflection, but also I think you have to be kind to yourself. So, you know, feel the sort of, it can be hurtful when somebody's unpleasant in that way. So feel how it feels in the body. You know, take a few deep breaths and, you know, see if you can bring some kindness to yourself. Well, at least you had tried, for example, to help. Well, you had helped, etc., etc. So I think you have to sort of take it quite easy, both on yourself and the other person in those situations. Yeah. Yes?
I was just going to share my kind of journey throughout the week, because at the beginning I found I was a bit, it wasn't so much something that was in my mind. Kind of, all throughout the day, I get to the end of the day and I go, oh no, I haven't done my good act, I'll buy someone something.
Mm.
So I'll buy my neighbour some flowers, which was really, really lovely. And you know, it was really nice for both parties.
Yes.
But I found the kind of, as the week progressed and as it went on, it was really on my radar, I found my kind of awareness day to day just expanded, and I found that I was more just generally aware of things popping up, and as that guy was saying, the kind of opportunities to go, oh, that's it. There's a spot, I can do something nice there.
Yes.
And I found other ways that weren't of kind of monetary ways of showing, you know, a nice word or helping someone with something or something more than I might normally do. So
it's like a positive spiral, isn't it? Yeah. As you say, what happens is that your awareness expands, and then as your awareness expands, there's more opportunity, you notice more opportunities to be kind or friendly or generous. And then as you notice more, you can do more, and then that has a reinforcing effect on your own mind and your own consciousness. And one of the effects is you can start to feel more connected with people, can't you? Just through giving. You feel a sense of connection. It's so simple in a way, but you know, we live in this city of millions of people, and loneliness and isolation is sort of endemic. And actually, one of the ways out of feeling isolated is to be generous, just to give, or to be friendly, to take the opportunity to do that. And you stop feeling so isolated. And you can do this even when you're walking down the street. It doesn't even have to be like you actually give something. You just look. Well, walk down the street with metta. See, or be on the tube with metta and see what happens. You start to have interactions with people that you might not have expected. I try and do it in Sainsbury's or Tesco's. I sort of walk around with as much metta as I can. It makes shopping a little bit more pleasant. And then often, you know, you do have positive interactions. Yeah. Yes, one more.
When I got to my work life, I think I realised how guarded people can be, and how I think maybe certain people in my workplace I consider to be unfriendly, but they're obviously quite stressed, and I don't feel as much sort of generosity to people at work generally as I do in the rest of my life.
Sure.
And it's kind of like you can be quite aware of your sort of how you're viewed professionally and how other people are viewed and that kind of thing can sort of come into things.
Yeah.
But then I did find myself in conversation with somebody who I viewed as unfriendly, which is really hard to like strike up the first conversation I've had in like 2 years that I've been there.
Wow.
So maybe that could be sort of general.
That's good. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. It's good. Yeah.
Yeah, guardedness and sort of professional life.
Yes. Yes. So then I think that's where I think it becomes, you need, I think you need to be courageous. I think it takes courage to be countercultural when you're in an environment where that's just not done. You know, and if you're going to be the one that's going to be friendly or generous, I think that's sort of stepping into, it's like taking a risk, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
bring more of yourself in bringing the situation.
More, and I think that takes courage, and it's worth trying. It can be really rewarding, particularly in those situations, because it's not done in, you know, it say in your office environment, it's not the done thing to be kind and generous in that way. If somebody is, it can make a real difference. You can really affect the situation positively. So what I'd encourage is for all of you to carry on doing this or to start doing it if you didn't do it. Just start, well, for the remainder of this course, let's see if we can reorientate our awareness so that we're bearing in mind, can I be kind or generous? And, you know, sort of aim to do at least one thing every day, but don't feel that you have to stop at just one thing. Yeah, sort of just take it a little bit further and maybe do the thing that is slightly more difficult. You know, take that step to, I don't know, send a card to somebody that you wouldn't normally want to speak to, or, you know, just take the next step in what might be a bit more awkward or difficult and see what happens. See if this sense of expansiveness continues. And yes, bear in mind that you might not get the response that you would like, in which case that's more food for thought and more stuff to work with. But carry on working with that. Yeah? Treat it as an exercise in working with the mind. So I'm going to ask you to carry on actually with all those three things. They're all really, really important. So meditating every day, a kindly or generous act, and a short period of doing nothing, sort of just sitting, watching, or sitting, not particularly doing anything, but you can look at the trees. So let's say a little bit more about, in a way, why this works, why it does lead to an expansion of consciousness. Or at least I'm going to attempt it. Let's see how this goes. So in the first week, I was saying that the root problem with every one of us who is not enlightened, and I include myself, the root problem, the root cause of all unsatisfactoriness, all suffering, all mental, at least, pain, is that we somewhere very, very instinctively think of ourselves as being a fixed and separate entity in this universe. Yeah? And then as soon as we've done that, we put everything else in the universe, including all the beings of in the universe, as out there, as other than me in here. I'm in here somewhere, and there's a real fixed me that is really separate, and the rest of the world is completely out there, and there's an objective universe that we're all plonked in. Yeah? And as soon as we have that, we can't help but create boundaries and barriers. We can't help but sort of shrink the mind. The mind naturally gets more contracted. consciousness starts to fold rather than unfold. And at least according to one model of Buddhism, this is happening in every moment. So one model of the mind says that consciousness is momentary. It's arising afresh every moment. Every moment, it's a new consciousness. Yeah? And in every moment, when it arises, this is just a model, when it arises fresh, in every moment, it's unbounded, it's limitless, it's expansive, it's got no sense of boundaries, it's got no sense of in here and out there as being separate. In fact, it's got even no sense of me being separate from the world. There's just a field of radiant, pure awareness in every moment. And then, in every moment, as it were, instantaneously, this delusion kicks in that, oh yes, there's a real me in here and a real objective world out there, and instantly consciousness narrows and it folds in on itself and it becomes constricted. And in that constriction, it's as if somewhere we kind of yearn for the freedom of that expansive consciousness. And in that constriction, we feel the pain of not being completely free, not being completely fulfilled. And then, of course, what we do is we sense that, oh yes, there's something wrong. I'm not completely, perfectly happy. So then what we do is, rather than look at what we've done to our mind, we try and get happiness from external things and people. Yeah? But the problem is the narrowing of consciousness, and it happens moment to moment with this root delusion of me. Now then, once we've got that view, and once consciousness has narrowed, in a way the mind can then get into all sorts of negative mental habits, be that craving, be that hatred or aversion, anger, anxiety, fear, whatever it is. The mind, as soon as it's narrowed, gets into all of these unhelpful mental patterns. Yeah? Very often, I'm not saying it happens all the time, but very often, that is our sort of habitual experience. And then, of course, if our mind is in one of those unhelpful, technically they're unskillful, mental states, then very often we'll act from that, causing more pain in our actions. We'll be harsh, we'll be unfriendly, we'll be unkind, we'll be ungenerous, and we'll cause somebody else pain, possibly. And in that action, we reinforce the contraction of the mind. Do you see what I mean? It's this vicious sort of circle, this of this delusion causing this initial narrowing. Then out of that narrowing and out of this sense of me being a separate entity, negative mental states, and then out of those negative mental states, unskillful, unhelpful actions that cause pain. Yeah. So what we're trying to do, the whole of the Buddhist path, is about reversing that process. And we start with our actions. That's the easiest place to start, in a way. So according to this model of Buddhism, there are three stages, and the first stage is trying to act with more kindness and generosity, more contentment, more awareness, more consideration, more truthfulness, to act more and more ethically, to act more and more skillfully. So we first of all start with the external. We act as best we can, more and more skillfully. What that does is that lightens the mind and starts to make it a little bit more expansive, a little bit happier, a little bit more connected, a little bit more free, a little more fulfilled. Yeah? And then, on the basis of that, as it were, we meditate. And when you meditate, you work directly on the mind. You work directly using the mind on the mind. Yeah? And meditation then starts to create an even more expansive, aware, fulfilled, positive, emotionally positive mind. You need the both. You need the actions, and then you need the reinforcement and the more direct working of meditation. So they're the first two stages. But even meditation in that, in the way that I've described it, doesn't tackle this root delusion, this deep-seated instinctive view that we have, that I'm a separate fixed entity. So then you need reflection. So on the basis of a very, very positive state of mind, you start to reflect on that delusion and how actually we're not fixed entities and we're not completely separate. And if you look for where is this fixed me, when you look in meditation to find me, you don't find a me. But the very act of looking can be a helpful process in undermining this delusion. So this then becomes the third stage of the path, which is practicing wisdom. It's wisdom practice. So you have ethics, you have meditation, and you have wisdom. And each of those is trying to reverse this vicious circle. Yeah. So on this course, in a way, we started with some wisdom reflections. And then we, last week, were looking at how do you still the mind a little bit more. We were looking at the tendency to have distracted thoughts, unaware distracted thoughts, prapancha. And I was giving you some tips as to how you work with prapancha, how you work with distraction, how you still the mind a little bit more. And then in the homework, I was asking you to work on the ethics, on your behaviour in the world, and see if you can turn that around a little bit more. I'm going to ask you to carry on doing that. And then, of course, this week we did the metta bhavana, which is directly working on making the mind brighter and more positive, reinforcing that ethical behaviour. So do you see how it all fits together? Yeah? So any questions on anything I've said so far before I say one more kind of point? Yes?
You said it's basically using the basis of positive emotion to then begin reflecting. Is that...
Yeah.
So, is it about timing?
I mean, in a way, you can start reflecting sort of whenever you like. They're not necessarily sequential in the way that I've outlined in the model. They sort of run concurrently. It's just that if we're not in a very positive state, the reflections tend not to go very deep. The mind is too caught up for the reflections to really go deep. And also what can happen is that if we're not in a very positive state, we'll misunderstand the teaching. It's very easy to take what I've just said about not being a fixed and separate entity, misunderstand it, and in a negative state of mind think that what's being said is, oh, I don't exist. Yeah? I don't exist at all. And that's sort of a misunderstanding. In a sense, in an absolute sense, it might be true that we don't exist, but it's better to think that we do exist, but not as we think we do. Something's going on, but not what we think. We're not the fixed and separate entity that we think. So what I'm saying is that when you're not in a very positive state of mind, either the reflection doesn't go very deep, or it's very easy to misunderstand the reflection and then just reinforce some negative state. Because the reflection, remember this view that we're trying to tackle. This view that we're trying to tackle doesn't exist just at a conscious level. It's instinctive. It's as deep as the survival instinct. It's as deep as this, probably its evolution over millions of years has bred into us, this survival instinct that's based on having a sense that I'm a fixed and separate entity. And that I've got to therefore survive. Yeah? So from an evolutionary biological perspective, it's a really useful instinct. Unfortunately, it's not based on reality. It's sort of useful to survive, but because it's not based on how things really are, it never leads to complete fulfillment. And what Buddhism is saying is that, okay, yes, you've got this sense of me, and that's brought you this far. It's brought you into self-awareness. But there's further to go, and the mind has more potential than that. And, of course, the goal of the mind is represented by a fully enlightened, awakened being. A Buddha. Yeah?
Do you think in this picture that you're putting forward,
yeah,
does the mind kind of have its own way of proceeding if we give it the space to do it?
Mm.
So, for example, I mean, in trivial ways in my life, I've sometimes intuited,
yeah,
and taught myself how to do things,
yeah,
and afterwards I thought, how did I do that? It's like I,
yeah,
you know, I kind of, I just saw the world and just,
yeah,
things from childhood and,
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But since I've been meditating more, I also sometimes get very strong intuitions about how to heal things that have,
sure,
been problems in my life,
sure,
quite long running, and they've,
yeah,
been real step forwards.
Yeah.
But if you kind of, nobody's actually, I've heard lots of helpful things, but it hasn't been, if you do this, that,
yeah,
that might be the positive outcome.
Yeah.
So is that sort of what you're saying, that we sort of have almost like DNA, some sort of thing in our mind which will take us forward?
Yeah, could. Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really good way of looking at it. What Buddhism would say is that if we, or at least another model, is that if we didn't sort of dampen this mind actively, it would naturally be pure. This wisdom would be natural to us. It's also instinctive and innate in us. There is this, according to this model, it's not the only way of thinking about it, so you mustn't take it too literally, but it's as if the mind is naturally pristine and expansive and positive and loving and wise. But that what happens is we take this very expansive state and we contract it and we cloud it with our negative emotions and our delusions. According to this model, those negative emotions are, well, one of the words used is adventitious. So they are the extraneous aspect that we've brought. If we didn't do that, the mind would be pure. A bit like clouds covering up the sun. You can't see the sun if you've got lots of clouds, but the sun is shining behind the clouds. You can't see it, we can't see it, because we've brought in these clouds. But the clouds are the extra things that we've brought in. So all of our negativity, all of our craving, all of our delusion, all of our hatred, all of our grasping, all of this me orientation is, as it were, blocking out the sun, and the mind would be radiant if we didn't do that. The trouble is that those clouds also go really, really deep. They're really instinctive too. So it's not going to be an easy thing just to say, let's have a clear blue sky every day with the sun shining. It's potentially there, but to really achieve that, we're going to have to work hard. So you've got these different models. One model is actually you've got to make a lot of effort to clear these clouds. And then another model is saying, yeah, but it was always a blue sky, if only you could have seen it. Do you see what I mean? So both are true. Both are true. Yeah.
Something's troubling me because so you mentioned the survival instinct, and in a way I think, well, that is the human condition and it comes with being human, so I can choose to believe that there's blue sky, but the reality is that there are also clouds and it
yes.
being human and
yeah.
all these things in order to survive and be a species.
Yeah.
Resource would be limited, we'll have to fight for food. If everyone else gets it and I don't get it, then I don't survive. So if there's something that I think, well, it's what we are, it's a human condition, and because it's all comes from conditions, how can we ever not have them?
So I'd agree that it is the human condition. I do think that that's right. But what I would also say is that it's possible to transcend that human condition. And that's what Buddhism's teaching us. It's saying that, yes, this is the human condition. You don't have to therefore feel guilty about it. Everybody has this condition. Everybody, at least who isn't a fully enlightened being, has this condition. It is the natural human state. But we don't have to be limited by it. And in a way, you can see that without in a way, taking on Buddhism, you can just see that some people seem to exhibit a lot more kindness and generosity and live in a very expansive way. And I think when you meet those people, there's something bright about them. They seem to be positive, bright, fulfilled people. And it's not that they just have good things happen to them. I'm sure that everybody has difficulties. But some people seem to meet it with positivity, don't they? Even difficulties. Some people seem naturally like that. And what Buddhism says is that, yes, that is the case. Some people have more of that than others. But none of us is restricted to just staying as we are. All of us can develop the mind. That is also part of the human condition, this ability to develop the mind. Is part of our birthright. And what's more, Buddhism would say that development can take you so far that you can even transcend the human condition. I don't know what that's like, but it would be not having even that survival instinct. It would be that survival instinct that's me-focused would be somehow replaced with love and compassion for all beings. That's an incredible thing, but it's said to be possible. And in a way, it's an incredibly lofty ideal, but what is more possible is for you to glimpse bits of that ideal. It's not that unusual to have experiences where you do feel radiant, connected, fulfilled in your mind, and it's not necessarily because you've got everything you want. Yes, it is. So part of this is about having the confidence. And the word for confidence in Buddhism is Shraddha. And part of the Buddhist path is developing Shraddha. Yes, confidence. And the way to do that is to practice and then look at the results. And as the results happen, as you do become more positive, expansive, it deepens your confidence. That yes, this path works. Yeah? Good. Okay, I want to say one more thing, but I'm only just going to start it and then I want to sit for a little bit, which is that when the mind is radiant and expansive, what it's full of positive qualities. If we could take the clouds away, if we could take all away the unnecessary suffering that we impose on ourselves, what emerges is radiant, and it's also full of positive qualities. All the qualities that are associated with the Buddha, his wisdom, his compassion, his love, his energy, his fearlessness, his patience, all of that is contained or part of this radiant awareness that unfolds. Yeah? That too is our birthright. At least it's our potential. And one of those qualities is, well, it's metta, it's love. One of the qualities that emerges in the enlightened mind, and it emerges spontaneously and naturally and unboundedly, is metta. So one of the things that we're also doing is developing these positive qualities as a way to approaching what an enlightened person would be like. So when we do the metta bhavana, when we act from friendliness or generosity, you're cultivating more and more metta, and that is moving us in the direction of what an enlightened consciousness would be like. So what I'd like you to do in this week, as well as doing these three things, perhaps sort of at the same time, is really being aware of, sensitively aware of your mind as much as you can in a kindly way. So bring metta to your experience, that's what I'm trying to say. Be sensitive to your experience. Look for the nuances of your experience. Look for beauty in your experience. There's so much beauty at this time of year. You don't have to look very far to find something beautiful. And be sensitive. Develop this sensitivity of heart, this openness of heart. Look for a sense of, do it deliberately, you know, look for metta or develop metta when you're on the tube or on the way to work or stuck in traffic or on your bike. Rather than contract, develop this sensitivity. Yeah? I'll say more about these qualities next week, and I'll probably come back to sensitivity again. It's a really important quality. But for now, I'd like to finish with a period of just sitting.